My first guest is no stranger to you. He's a former employee of NASA. He's a former special effects coordinator for films in Hollywood. He's got a great CV, great resume, this man. His website is whatreallyhappened.com. I said at the top of the program, it's one of the great resources online today for information and analysis. He's a terrific radio host as well. You can catch his show, which goes out at 11 a.m. That's Oahu time. And it goes out, so I'm just trying to make, what time would that be then? That would be around about 1 p.m. Pacific time, I think, something like that. That's when it starts. He'll tell us the details in a minute. Let's welcome back to the program for the first of the new year, our great friend Mike Rivero. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Richie. Thank you for having me back.
It's always good. Listen, I sent you, and you know, I never try to Shanghai my guests or surprise them, but I just sent you a quick link there that I got tweeted about 3 minutes ago after it started the programme. Rather bizarre story in the Daily Mirror today, which, as you well know, is a British tabloid newspaper, suggesting that a former sex offender is going to design a doll, a childlike but lifelike doll, to help, you know, paedophiles, you know, prevent them from committing crimes against children. And it's not a hoax, Mike. The world is kind of mad, isn't it?
I understand it's not a hoax here, and I think it's sort of encouraging a sense of tolerance for this kind of behavior, which, you know, I'm nobody's idea of a saint. I was a wild child in my youth, but always with, you know, women my own age. And I get some real strong instincts kicking in when I hear about children being used in this way. And I don't think it should be tolerated or accepted at all. And having this doll out there, I think, is almost legitimizing these kinds of practices. Which with all the members of the British media and government that seem to be caught up in this kind of behavior, maybe that's the goal, is to make this kind of behavior, if not socially acceptable, at least socially tolerable. But to be very honest, I don't know that it's going to work. It may, in fact, encourage these pedophiles to go on out and give vent to their desires in the real world. There was not too long ago, there was this idea that providing adult-size love dolls to sex offenders would discourage them from going on out and attacking real women. Unfortunately, that didn't work out.
Bizarre story, Michael. Yeah, we'll leave that there because it's only just come in. Apparently, this was in the Mirror today. I didn't see it. Crazy story. I like your suggestion that it might be in some way trying to garner sympathy for people who commit crimes against children, or empathy, or, as you said, tolerated, especially in the times we're in now, particularly with the historic child sex abuse investigations ongoing here in the United Kingdom. Michael, a big story coming out of the BBC this afternoon here in England is, of course, the attack that took place in Jakarta today, the Indonesian capital. As the news as we have it at the moment, and you'll be on top of this as well, is that 2 civilians and 5 attackers bizarrely died in the assaults, and they were described to the BBC as some sort of an attempt to mimic the attacks in Paris. I lamented earlier on, and sometimes I feel like I'm boring myself as much as I might be boring my listeners, lamented the fact, Michael, that this is swallowed and then regurgitated by the media as fact. ISIS did it. That's the way it is. It's a fact. Get on with it and let's move on. How are you reading that situation in Jakarta today?
Well, I'm reading it exactly the same way that you are. Right now, the U.S. government is dealing with a growing problem in that some of the emails that have come out from the congressional investigation into Benghazi and Hillary Clinton's email server are continuing to confirm that Al-Qaeda and ISIS are actually creations of the U.S. government, of the Central Intelligence Agency, and the U.S. was smuggling weapons from Libya through that consulate in Benghazi to ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria to overthrow Assad. And so the U.S. government is trying to basically get ahead of the propaganda ball, as it were, and remind everybody that ISIS is bad, that we should just hate them, not pay attention to anybody who is pointing out the very obvious fact that the U.S. government is arming and supplying and running interference for them. Over in Iraq, the Iraqi government is saying the U.S. gets in the way of the Iraqi forces trying to recapture Iraq territory from ISIS. And so there's this huge deception going on. It's a manufactured enemy, like Emmanuel Goldstein in 1984. And they're trying to reassert that ISIS is bad and get us all back in line to just two-minute hate on ISIS and paying no attention to the accumulating evidence that all of this is gigantic and tragic hoax.
Absolutely right. And did I or did I not see this week U.S. Army officials or Pentagon officials saying that they're going to restart this Training the Moderates program, Michael? I can't even say it without laughing.
I'm the same way yourself. I mean, it was a complete and utter failure before. What was going on was they set up this training of the so-called moderates and they gave them guns. And then, of course, the people who'd signed up for the training program turned out to be ISIS and Al-Qaeda, took their weapons and equipment and split. So, you know, having had a complete, utter failure on their hands, let's go ahead and do it again and hope for the best. They've announced a new program of military garrisons across the Middle East, forgetting that they've already been doing that for the last 25 years. That isn't working. They're basically in thrash mode because this agenda to put puppet governments in charge of all the resource-rich areas of the Middle East is crumbling. It's falling apart. These nations are trying to break free as soon as they're conquered. The U.S. has had to go back into Iraq, well, now for the third time, Yemen for the second time, still trying to get into Syria, having to go back into Libya again, having to go back into Afghanistan again. And this was all supposed to have been completed by 2008, according to the information leaked by General Wesley Clark. And so the program is definitely off schedule. It's definitely over budget and shows, frankly, I don't think they can complete it. And our government is apparently in a rush to trigger a real bloody world war before the collapse of the economy. So they got somebody to blame it on. In fact, there's already news stories in the American corporate media today about how all the economic turmoil is actually being caused by ISIS, who have weaponized stock trading algorithms, and they're out there causing, you know.
Michael, wouldn't you give, I mean, I don't know if any of your grandparents are still alive. I hope they are. But wouldn't you give your granny up just to have one presenter, to have the courage to speak to a Pentagon or a Washington official to say, come on, pull the other one. You want us to believe that this group that grew up out of the so-called Arab Spring, which of course we know was manufactured anyway. You want us to believe that this relatively small band of lunatic mercenaries whom you armed now have accounting departments, now have departments of education. I mean, Michael, I've never known anything as ridiculous as this. And I watch the news on a daily basis as you do, praying that at least just one presenter will risk their job. Because if they do and they get fired, I'll give them a job. To say, you know, on air to a big audience of people, listen, how can they insult their intelligence by asking us to buy this nonsense?
Well, I think in a large measure, just out of desperation or a desire to believe, it looks like our government seriously thinks we're that dumb and seriously thinks the vast majority of Americans are still believing all these things we're being told. I mean, Obama on his State of the Union speech, the economy is doing great. And then, of course, the day after that, we have a major tank on the stock market. All the indicators are down. Today, the U.S. Treasury Department is out there saying, oh, yes, Obama has turned the economy around. You will believe it. And it seems like the motto of our government is, if at first you don't succeed, lie, lie again, because that's all they know how to do. They have been running this country with lies, fraud, and deceptions for so many decades, they literally do not know any other way to run a country. And, of course, when you have a population which in polls indicates it's the U.S. federal government is the biggest problem in their lives, you understand that things are reaching a breaking point. And I am still convinced that at some point in the not-too-distant future, the U.S. government is going to collapse the way the former Soviet Union did. Vanish into the dustbin of history. We're going to restart the country. We're going to forever ban private central banking and just sort of restart this country to take care of the country and its people rather than make a bunch of elites rich and powerful.
Yeah, it's amazing, Mike. I'm just thinking about, you know, about you talked there about the government assuming and understanding that the people are stupid and they buy it. And that skepticism is gone. And I was thinking there while you were talking, we have, I think, collectively lost their ability to be sceptical. We obviously have, because if we didn't, you know, we'd be marching in the streets against this nonsense. And yet, Michael, in our communities and in our families, we haven't lost that ability. I mean, when one of our neighbours tells us something, we don't believe him. or we don't believe her. We're very skeptical about their claims, you know, about their success at work or their success in life. We're very, you know, we've got a healthy skepticism about what we're told in terms of the people we meet on a daily basis. But yet we lose that when it comes to our elected officials. I don't get it, Mike.
I'm not entirely sure that you're accurate, because certainly talking person to person around my part of the planet, even people who aren't really politically oriented, they're not paying attention, even they are saying it's reached ridiculous levels of lies and deceptions. I think the reason there aren't marches in the street is because there isn't a focal point for everybody to focus on. Like, there's one issue that everybody gets together and say, we have to march on this. You know, you've got this group over here who's concerned about the cover-up of the murder of White House Deputy Counsel Vince Foster. This group over here over Hillary's mishandling of classified information. You got this group over here asking if Hillary was actually conducting an espionage operation out of the State Department and using her charitable foundation to collect payments. There are so many lies. You know, there isn't a single focus point that public outrage can center on right now.
Number of listeners made a comment on something I said in the monologue. You will probably have heard today that the Metropolitan Police have announced that there'll be 600 new armed police officers made available for London. And in the interview that Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, who heads up the Met Police, in the interview he gave to the media, he said two hilarious things. One is, we don't want to worry you, even though they keep flashing the colour-coded terror warning chart on telly all the time. You should be scared because an attack is imminent even. And then he said, you know, intelligence is the best way. Intelligence is the best way. I made the point, of course, that every time we hear about an attack, or every time we hear about somebody who's left Britain to go to Syria to join ISIS, we then learn that this guy was known to the intelligence services all along, or the intelligence agencies all along. So that's utter nonsense. But I did say, Mike, that, you know, we, and you particularly don't on whatreallyhappened.com, you don't do fear porn. We don't do it here. But you've got to imagine, Michael, that in the near future, they've got some sort of attack planned for England. I'm talking about some sort of false flag attack. It just makes perfect sense that they would do that, particularly now with the new Snoopers Charter, which they will vote on in Parliament in a month's time, which gives them unprecedented powers to the intelligence agencies. Oh, look, okay, we're not stupid. We know they've been taking those liberties anyway in terms of the snooping. But to justify all this, Mike, I think they need a big attack, and I think one might be on the way.
I think that's a good assumption, and not just for Great Britain. Like I said earlier, the U.S. is trying to kick off a really bloody global war, so they got something to blame for the coming economic crash. And so there's going to be something that's going to happen to get us all riled up about ISIS again. As you know, we actually had this attempt to create a crisis with Iran. With the U.S. sailed these two boats full of Marines into Iranian territorial waters. I think they were hoping Iran would grab them and refuse to release them, or even better, fire on them, would have given Obama something to talk about at the State of the Union, and, of course, would have given the U.S. An excuse not to lift the Iranian sanctions now that Iran has complied with all the requirements of the P5+1. Iran did not take the bait. They came out and said, yeah, honest accident. They sent the men back. They're going to send the boats back. And now the U.S. is saying sanctions will be lifted this weekend. I would not be surprised to see something happen, possibly staged by Israel, in a last-ditch effort, as soon as tomorrow, to try and create a political climate where the U.S. and the European Union can say, well, we're justified in keeping the sanctions in place.
Yeah, that's a good point, that. And, of course, it is interesting that Iran said, despite the sanctions being lifted on it, or her, I should say, we call countries by in the feminine, don't we? Despite Iran having sanctions lifted against it, the Iranians have said that they're going to put a block on American goods coming into the country, which I found kind of funny.
Well, you know, tit for tat, sauce for the goose and everything. Plus the fact that, you know, these days American products, far from being considered the best in the world, are viewed as overpriced, unreliable junk. You know, they got lots of little stickers all over them to tell you the correct way to use it and whatnot. But American products just don't last anymore. Most of American products aren't even made in the U.S. anymore anyway. They're made in Asia. And why buy them through America with a profit markup when you can buy them direct from the Asian factories? So very clearly, the U.S. is in decline, despite what Obama said at the State of the Union speech. And I think they're trying to let the market down slowly to avoid a crash. But on the other hand, you've got the Federal Reserve and all those Wall Street banks, which started buying busted mortgage-backed securities and overpriced stocks going all the way back to 2008. And all of that stuff is still on their balance sheets. They can't let the stock market correct or they're going to be insolvent overnight. And so they're stuck. They have to keep on creating new money to keep on buying up the stocks as fast as other people are selling them. And that process, of course, only undermines trust in the dollar, because that's the only thing the dollar has for it is trust.
Of course, like every other currency. I've had an email from Alan Lyman. Alan is listening to the program in Tel Aviv, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And he's a longtime supporter of Michael Rivero. And he says he's been with your website since day one. So he wants to say hello to you from Tel Aviv, Alan. Alan says, Richie, would you ask Michael, is there any truth to some of these independent media stories about very sick seals turning up on the Pacific coast of the United States? Now, Michael, again, you know, if you haven't come across this, you don't have to answer this, but there were a number of other alternative media sources claiming earlier this week, and in fact over the Christmas period, is that wildlife, the signs are obvious now on wildlife on the Pacific coast of the United States that something is very, very, very badly wrong. And of course, this all, of course, leads to Fukushima. Have you come across those stories, Mike, about the seals, and is there any truth to any of this?
Well, certainly, yeah, there are strange die-offs along the Pacific coast of the Americas. Could be Fukushima, but you also need to remember we're finishing up a summer where we had a record-setting El Nino warming current, and the El Nino warming current comes from undersea volcanoes. I mean, if you look at a map of the floor of the ocean over at that little peak in the west where the El Nino current first appears, you will see, you know, just hundreds of volcanic cones all over the ocean floor. There's no way to know how many are erupting at any given time. And along with putting heat into the ocean, it's also putting in some very toxic chemicals, hydrogen sulfide, huge amounts of methane, which are going to draw the free oxygen out of the water. So it could be a combination of multiple factors. I wouldn't rule out Fukushima, but I would also say we have to take into account the effluents from the volcanoes that are the source of the El Nino current.
What did you make of the State of the Union debacle the other night? A couple of listeners have asked me to ask you about that. I didn't cover it in any great depth apart from, you know, mocking one or two of the statements made by Obama. But these things generally are an opportunity for the lawyer-in-chief, whether it's Obama or Bush or Father Bush, to say that everything is hunky-dory, basically. That's what it appears to us outside the United States. What did you make of it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The State of the Union is the president comes on out and he says everything is great and this is what we're going to do for you. This was Obama's last State of the Union address, and he was focusing in large part on trying to establish what his legacy will be, which includes this claim that he has rescued the economy from the devastation caused by the preceding presidents. Of course, that's absolutely not true. But Obama is now in his last year in office, and he's starting to think about his place in the history books. And you know, he's got a huge ego. When he was out there doing his speech about gun control right after the new year, he just kept saying, I, something he referred to himself something like 40 times in a 30-minute speech. And to me, it looks like he is suffering from narcissistic personality disorder, which unfortunately is a common ailment for high-level politicians.
You mentioned gun control. We've got you for about another 5 minutes. Then I let you go. You got to prepare for your own program. What a pro Rivero is. What a pro. He comes on. I wouldn't do it, Mike. It's funny. You do it. You're great to come on. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't go on a show so close to the beginning of my own. But then again, I'm not as smooth and as suave as the boy Rivero, I have to say.
No, I mean that sincerely. Nowhere, gets, but don't stop trying.
But don't stop trying anyway. You talked about gun control there. Listen, I don't doubt that it was a genuine accident. The shooting of that young girl in Pennsylvania, the 12-year-old girl, the circumstances seem to be pretty awful. Allegedly, I don't know if it's true or not, but allegedly her dad pulled a gun on a constable. And in the panic, the 12-year-old girl was shot dead. But a number of our listeners who are in the United States and who are very concerned about the overtures from the White House about, you know, gun control and the, you know, the Second Amendment and all of that, they're saying, well, there's never any talk about controlling the supply of guns to the police when you see things like this. This is a terrible case, Michael. Is it cut and dry, this? Is it a case of her father being a bad guy, pulled a gun on the police officer, and she was accidentally killed? What do you make of this?
Well, it's hard to know because, unfortunately, the police have been caught fabricating their stories after these civilians get killed. It's become an epidemic problem. The police are being turned into an oppressive force in the United States. And last year, the police departments of the United States murdered more innocent Americans than all the mass shooters and terrorists put together. And it is a significant problem. Now, as far as surrendering our guns and being dependent on the police, there are a couple of problems with that. When a crime is actually being committed, there are only two parties there, the perpetrator and the victim. And if you want to stop the crime, you have to give the victim the right and the means to defend themselves, to act as a deterrent. The police show up after the crime is long over. They pose with the dead bodies to get their picture in the newspaper, and they think they're somehow relevant. But it's really absurd. In the United States, if you dial 911, which is our emergency phone number, it can take anywhere from 15 to 22 minutes for the police to even show up in the first place. And by then, the criminal's done what they're going to do, and they're long gone. And the other problem is the cops may not show up at all. There was a very famous case in Georgetown near Washington, D.C., where these three women were heard a break-in into their home. They called the police, 911. Police said, we'll get there. The perpetrators basically took these three women and sexually abused them all night long, didn't leave until sunrise the next morning. The women sued the Washington, D.C. police, and the court said, look, there actually is no law saying the police are obligated to come and protect you from violent criminals, so no, you can't sue the police if they decide they're not going to show up and place themselves at risk. So when you have that kind of a legal precedent, and, you know, I mean, under the civil forfeiture laws, the police are stealing more from the American people than the criminals. I think more and more Americans are saying, I'm going to take responsibility for defense of my home against crime, and I have a natural right to do that. The government has no right to disarm me and make me a wide-open target for criminals. It kind of makes you wonder what side the government is on, the side of the law-abiding citizen, or if we have a criminal society because we have a criminal government.
Absolutely. Absolutely final question, a very final question. Got to ask you this. Do you still think, we last spoke, of course, just before Christmas, do you still think, and I know this is very complicated for you, but I'll ask you anyway, do you still think that of the craven bunch of, I would say, idiots standing to become the next president of the United States, do you still believe that Trump is the best of a bad bunch?
I think Trump is, well, I like Trump because he is an outsider. I like Trump because he's got his own money. He can't be bought. He's going to do what he thinks he wants to do. And that's why the GOP are terrified of him. I mean, even his own party is trying to get him out of this race somehow because he will not do what the financial backers of the political parties want him to do. And for that very reason, I think it's time we get somebody like Trump in there. We're going to have to back him up with a Congress that is going to be willing to work with him. And I'm predicting we're going to see a tremendous anti-incumbency fever sweeping this country in the coming elections where, I mean, there's even talk that John McCain may lose his Senate seat this year.
No harm in that, Mike.
The American people are just fed up with politics as usual, corruption as usual, sellouts as usual. They're sick and tired of all the Israel firsters out there saying that we have to send our money and your children to save Israel every time they attack another country. And I think Americans have really reached a breaking point on that.
Certainly do. And this is the absolutely final question, because you did mention the dollar collapse. Friends of ours, including Gerald Celente and the dollar vigilante, Jeff himself, Jeff Berwick, they're saying that it's imminent, Mike. Do you go along with that? Is the dollar collapse imminent in terms of next year, this year?
I would be very surprised if we reach the end of this year with our economic system still intact. I mean, we're seeing incredible chaos on the equities markets. They're not even trying to hide the fact that they're having to rig things to try and keep the market looking good. In the process of rigging the markets higher, they've destroyed what's called the risk interest pricing mechanism, and that means nobody can really estimate the damage that's going to happen when it does start to unwind and the panic sets in.
Have a great show, Michael, and enjoy the coming weekend. Lovely to chat with you. We'll catch up again in February. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye for now. Michael Rivero, check out whatreallyhappened.com. That's where you'll find Mike. You'll find links to previous radio shows by Mike. His radio show is terrific, by the way. Very newsy, very matter of fact. And Michael is very factual in terms of what he says. On the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com on ACR Fab Radio. As a tune-in app as well. We're taking over the world. We're not really. Not at all. Delusions of grandeur. Right, my next guest then, it's been kind of too long since he was on the programme. He's been talking to me now for a few years on TV and radio. I value him very highly. I often say on this programme that journalism is a dirty word. We don't have journalists. We certainly don't in the mainstream media anymore anyway. He is the producer and the presenter of the terrific BCFM weekly politics show out of Bristol. He's a former BBC journalist and you can regularly see him, or you can see him regularly contributing to RT and to other programmes as well. It's a thrill to welcome back to the show an old friend of ours, Tony Gosling. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
Thanks very much, Richie. Yeah, fine. Thanks.
Great to have you on.
I'm up in Gloucestershire today.
Right. On business, pleasure, work. What's going on in Gloucestershire?
More like pleasure, actually. had a lovely walk this afternoon. You know, every now and again I have to have a day off and take a walk out and get some air, especially on a beautiful day like today.
Yeah, cold but lovely. It was the same here in Manchester, blue skies, but bloody cold. You've actually hit on something very important there. When you spend a lot of time working on these types of stories and banging your head against the brick wall, like we all do, with our own audiences, trying to maybe get people to have a second look at a certain subject, you do, of course, have to step away from it and give yourself a breather. And it's something I certainly try to do all the time. I think it's very good advice. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, my friend. I'm going to jump straight in with a tweet. Because The Order on Twitter, who's a fan of your radio programme, said, Richie, ask Tony if he thinks that illegal immigration was pre-planned to do a number of things, to lower wages, to destroy the welfare state and to collapse public sector services. That's a tweet from The Order on Twitter. Tweet at Richie Allen.
He's missed one thing out there, and that is to give a perfect excuse for terrorism.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the world we're living in at the moment, is that, many of us are familiar with the Gladio program, NATO's Gladio program in the 1960s, the 1970s, 80s, even into the 90s. This is all documented stuff. That what they were doing was NATO intelligence and the SAS, the CIA, special forces, many of the forces in Europe were blowing us up. We now know, due to parliamentary inquiries in Italy, Belgium, Switzerland, not in Britain. I mean, there's nothing really much been done into that, although, of course, there's a lot of suspicion that similar stuff was going on with the IRA, dirty tricks there in Ireland. And and it seems pretty obvious to me from looking at the particularly these recent Paris attacks and big question marks about who actually carried them out. The fact that it doesn't look like there will be any proper trials of the people who were supposed to have done it because they're all dead. And maybe some are on the run, etc. So we're dealing with a similar to the 7-7 narrative where there's lots and lots left hanging in the air. People who've lost their loved ones are not given any proper justice. For example, in the inquests in London, you've still got families who have had no answers to their very important questions about whether proper changes have been made within the security services to make sure that things like this can't happen again. Of course, they're not made. I interviewed a chap, I don't know if you've come across him, called Ian Puddick last night, who was the victim of fraud and perversion of the course of justice, whatever you want to call it. It's complete police corruption by the counter-terrorism command at the City of London Police. And these are the same people who were supposed to be in charge of looking after the politics. I mean, it's the kind of political police, internal police. They're a sort of liaison between ordinary cops and MI5. And they are crooked. I mean, this guy, poor Ian Puddick, has been raided, etc. He's had been roughed up by the police, very seriously threatened by the police. And in conjunction with the private security firm Kroll, he's had to fight his way with some of the best barristers in London to actually to just be able to carry on his life as normal. So it's been an absolute uphill struggle for him. Now, you have to ask questions about such police and whether they're accountable. And, of course, they are not accountable. It seems that they can do it. There are many very good police officers out there. And to a certain extent, you've got to make sure they can carry on and do their job. But when they're found to be perjuring themselves and raiding innocent people, accusing them of being drug dealers, etc., when all they're trying to do is a low-level vendetta for a friend, then, you know, we can't trust these people and we need to have proper investigations into them. So that's the one side of our friend, the orders thing I'd say is, you know, there is now this flood of migrants coming across Europe, and this is all deliberate. Yes, he's absolutely right, or she. But the one of the big important sides of it is we are now staring in the face the possibility that we're going to start getting bomb attacks regularly, more regularly, increasingly ratcheting up across Europe, and all this is going to be blamed on Syrians or, you know, maybe other people from other parts of the Middle East, where it could even be our own so-called security forces that are carrying these attacks out. Now, I'm not saying that is the same the case for every one attack. But what it does do is it ramps up, as it did in Italy in the 1970s, particularly what they call the strategy of tension. And it's a great excuse to get rid of our civil liberties and to introduce a kind of police state rule, as they did in Italy, in fact, in the 70s. It was extreme lockdown, lots and lots of money channeled to the police. So that's really, I think, the true face of all of this. Of course, the other side is, yes, it's driving down wages. But, you know, the main way to stop all this is just to stop bombing Syria. And we had this massive vote, didn't we, just before Christmas?
Absolutely, Tony.
Yes, we're going to do some more bombing of Syria.
Do you know what I just want to do? Because a couple of listeners have said to us while we're chatting, Richie, you got to just tell us a little bit more about Gladio. I'm always aware, Tony, that we talk about these things so often, but you always have new listeners, and you'll have them on your own programme, that don't understand what Gladio is. And I suppose the Clift Notes of Operation Gladio were attacks carried out in Western Europe in the 1980s, blamed on communists, but they were carried out by NATO officials, the usual CIA, MI6, maybe even the Mossad. And these,
well, people will be very familiar with terms like the Baader-Meinhof gang,
yes,
terms like the Red Brigades, not so familiar with the Action Directe, which was the so-called far-left terror group in Belgium, which didn't actually exist.
It was
just the SAS going in and murdering people. So, you know, these are the sorts of terms which people may remember at the time when, you know, there's another terrible attack by the Baader-Meinhofs. This turns out now to have been almost all orchestrated through NATO intelligence. So these groups did exist, radical left-wing groups did exist, but what was happening is they were being infiltrated, steered, and manipulated by NATO intelligence and by fascists, effectively getting in there and causing mayhem in order to give the government an excuse to then have a kind of clampdown. Now, this was a ruse which was used, targeted really at the political classes, so that legislation could be passed. That's through, you know, the MPs in various countries, but also generally against the media and the public to spread panic in order to, it's a bit like Naomi Klein and her shock doctrine, in order to, you know, force through change. So, and that's what happened. I mean, in Belgium, it was very, very specific, because the Belgian parliament had been debating whether to block the placement and location of US cruise missiles in Belgium, as they were saying quite rightly that, look, we don't want these cruise missiles driving around our streets. You know, these are ballistic missiles on the backs of trolleys, you know, so that, or lorries, basically, they were mobile. They say, look, this is just making Belgium a target. We don't want these things. And at the same time, lo and behold, men in carnival masks appeared in supermarkets in various places in Belgium over the space of about a year or so, and just started machine gunning, massacring ordinary shoppers, and not taking very much money either. But this has now been shown to have been run by MI6, yeah, CIA and NATO intelligence. So this, I think, is exactly the sort of thing which is being planned now. And we've seen, you know, through the Paris attacks, lots and lots of questions. I'm sure you've been discussing.
It's very important, Tony.
The authenticity.
And you know what? It's brilliant you're bringing this up, because it's very important that people understand what Gladio was as a way into understanding what's going on now. Let me ask you a question that, as long as I know you and as well briefed as you are, you're finding this as difficult to deal with, I think, as I am. Here's the question. So we know that an intended consequence of destroying large swathes of the Middle East by funding, by creating, by positioning groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS. One of the intended consequences is to drive migrants out of those countries into Europe. However, while on the one hand, now I don't have a right wing bone in my body, and you know this from speaking to me, so I'm speaking for the hundreds of listeners a week who send me messages saying, Richie, you're too much of a socialist. Do you understand that amongst, no, they say this, Tone, they say that amongst these people coming through, there probably are some lunatics. And I've said this, the government has kind of got us by the short and curlies here. Because on the one hand, people like you and me, and you're a humanitarian, I've known you a long time, we want to look after the people that our governments, they've ruined their lives, they've destroyed their livelihoods, their lives and their countries. But on the other hand, we know that there's a strong possibility that a blind eye's been turned to, I don't know what the percentage is, whether it's 1%, 2% or 3% of radical jihadists, whom again have links to Western intelligence agencies, who might come into this country, who might come into France, who might come into America to do something heinous. Tony, how do you deal with that? That's the ultimate catch-22, surely.
Well, I mean, I don't doubt that there are some people that come along over to Europe and wish us harm. The thing is, I don't think that they have the capability to really organise mass attacks. They certainly don't have access to the sorts of weaponry, firearms, etc., necessary to carry out these attacks successfully. And also, I don't think they also have. I mean, one of the big sides of all this, of course, is the publicity that comes with it. You know, we see all these videos that come out supposedly made by ISIS. Well, the CIA already admitted that they fabricated videos about Osama bin Laden back in the noughties. So what makes you think that they might not be fabricating these videos today? I think what we're looking at here is, yes, there are many of these migrants come across, a handful of them, very few of them come across with evil intent. Most of them just want to get away from the war. I mean, it's quite obvious why they would want to do that. There's another sideline to all of this, and that is that a chap called Alex Perry, I don't know if you've come across him, he's the Africa correspondent for Newsweek for several years, and he's recently written a book called The Rift about Africa. But he's put his finger on it here, and he's saying, well, look, most of the migrant centres, the transit camps, etc., are being run by the mafia. Particularly, I mean, obviously Italy is rife with this kind of thing, but they're making millions a day out of this whole
crisis. Massive amounts of money.
The Italian government can't cope with all this influx of people, so they've had to set up camps. Well, they are run and operated by the mafia, and they're making millions out of it. So why should they want to stop bombing Syria? And why should they want to stop encouraging people to pay money to get to Europe from Africa if they don't making such a fortune out of it? And there's been no proper scrutiny and coverage. This is what absolutely mind boggles me, Richie, about this, is if you were to wind back 20, 30 years, there would be six or seven different mainstream media, UK, on either ITV, Channel 4 or BBC, documentary programmes. It would be absolutely chomping at the bit to make films about all this stuff.
They would, yeah, you're right.
Break it all to pieces for us all and to shock the government into doing something about it. Actually, what there is there's no real investigative journalism going on. So, I mean, I'd agree that there are sentiments amongst some of the people that are coming across, which are, oh, we don't like the West. Actually, I think they just want to settle down. But what happens is the Western intelligence services recruit. This is one of the things that was going on, for example, in the refugee camps in southern Turkey, at the beginning of the Syrian civil war. And that is that the Western intelligence services were in there trying to recruit people to go and join ISIS. And this is quite clear now that the Turkish intelligence were using that as a recruiting section. And what happened is over the months and years, a lot of the Syrians who were in those camps started to get wise to the fact that some of the people who were supposedly, you know, from ISIS or what would have been the Syrian rebels, saying, look, come on, let's just get rid of Assad and, you know, recruiting people and taking them back across the Turkish-Syrian border into Syria, were working for the West and working for NATO. And so after a while, they said, well, you know, we're not actually able to recruit people anymore because they've got wise to our game, at which point that they started closing those refugee camps. So they were only holding people for the possibility that they may be able to recruit people for ISIS. This is Turkey. This is NATO.
NATO country.
Very few people seem to have broken this down properly. And anyway, so I mean, my answer to your question, although I've taken a long time to get around to it, is simply that, yes, that sentiment is there. And it was there in Italy in the Red Brigades, and it was there in Germany in the Baader-Meinhof. But the actual direction and the operational strategy is steered by the intelligence services. I mean, I don't know if you've come across the... I've been rereading this book this week, actually. This book, Op JB, by Christopher Crichton.
No, I never read it. I know of it, but I never read it, yeah.
You should do. I mean, honestly, it's only about 200 pages. It's a fantastic book. And what it shows you... I mean, if you start with the James Bond novels, because Dennis Wheatley and Ian Fleming are two of the greatest writers in my view, because they were both involved in very, very top secret intelligence work in the Second World War. But they knew that they couldn't write about it afterwards. Yeah, they both desperately wanted to, but they couldn't write about it in a factual way. So they had to spin it into novels. And that's why the James Bond series of films and the books did so well, is because there was so much actual fact mirroring the real world in those novels. Things like Goldfinger, for example, you know, and there was also on Her Majesty's Secret Service with Telly Savalas sitting on top of a mountain in Switzerland threatening to destroy the world with Terminator technology, you know. And it's all very clear that Fleming was privy to a lot of secrets that he couldn't write about in a factual way, but he could spin into novels. Wheatley the same. So this novel Op JB, sorry, not novel, the book Op JB is more interesting for the fact that it was written as a historical account. And the author, Christopher Crichton, was very closely working with Fleming during World War II in something called M Section, which was where the M in the James Bond novels gets his name from. M, you know, the guy who's running James Bond,
yeah,
007.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear what's going on in there is that you've got a completely separate intelligence service, nothing to do with MI5 or MI6. They didn't know anything about what M Section were up to. It was even funded directly by the king by the crown. You know, it wasn't funded from ordinary taxpayers' pot from the treasury. And they had scores of people. They had a place called Burdham down in Hampshire, which was their operational headquarters. And as far as the guy that ran it, well, the reason they called it M Section is because it was run by this Major Desmond Morton, who's this Crowley-esque figure who was, although he was only a major, actually his abilities were kind of like a general, effectively, or a field marshal. He was incredibly powerful. He only reported directly to the King and Winston Churchill. And he was running operations through the war. I mean, the most important one being to get Martin Bormann, Hitler's treasurer, out of Berlin just in the last days of the war by canoe through Berlin under the noses of the Russians. And they had these uniforms which could be swapped between SS and Russian, you know, depending on who they were being confronted by in the middle of the night. And this kind of stuff went on. And I think this is extremely important to understand how, yes, the Nazis were, you know, doing all the stuff they were doing with the concentration camps, the evil that Hitler had, but they did amass a massive fortune. And so what happened at the end of the war was they'd managed to get Bormann out. So they got Bormann, persuaded Bormann to change the signatories on these bank accounts over in Switzerland so that that money was switched over to Desmond Morton and his close associates. And they then controlled vast billions of looted money from the Second World War and started to create their own kind of financial empire over in, you know, based in South America using Bormann. So this kind of background is not understood by many people, that there is this kind of financial empire. It is closely associated with criminal gangs and the Nazis. And the other, most important thing, of course, is that the Brits were very much involved in all this.
Up to their necks in it, Tony. I'm just going to do a quick, it's 28 minutes past the hour, do a quick time check there. The Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, ACR, Alternate Current Radio, Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester as well. Tony Gosling's website is bilderberg.org. Tony is one of a handful, only a handful of people as well briefed as anybody in the world on the origins of the Bilderberg Group, its origins, what it's been up to over the last 60, 65 years. We've often and spoken to him over the years about Bilderberg. We might get into some Bilderberg shortly. There are loads of questions coming in, so I'm going to try and get to as many of them as I can. They don't all have short answers, though, and I'm not going to be telling Tony to hurry up. Hubertus,
I will. I'll try and do some shorter answers.
No, you're fine, mate. No. Hubertus was on to say, Richie, don't forget ISIS IP addresses. Some of their Twitter accounts were traced back to London, registered to MI5. That's absolutely right. To the Home Office, I think. Not necessarily MI5, but you're right to say that, Hubertus.
It was the Department for Work and Pensions.
Department for Work and Pensions. That's right, not the Home Office.
Department for Work and Pensions actually sold a bunch of IP addresses to a dodgy company in Saudi Arabia that were then used them to operate ISIS accounts. So I don't know if the DWP knew exactly what was going on there, who they were selling them to, but they certainly didn't do any checks, did they?
No, they didn't.
I mean, you know, this is ridiculous. This is passing on stolen goods, or the people that they're doing deals with are obviously dodgy. I mean, the Saudis, let's just take a quick look at the Saudis. They've ruled today that it's now a criminal offence to compare the Saudi regime's judicial beheadings to ISIS beheadings.
Yeah, they have. I see that
today. It's now a criminal offence if you do that. Now, just a minute. This is what everybody is talking about in the pubs. Oh, it's a bit strange, isn't it? I thought that it was only ISIS that did public beheadings. No, it turns out the Saudi Arabians have doubled the number that they've done in the last few months.
Tony, a friend of mine was in Riyadh years ago. This is a true story. I won't name him because he won't like it. A friend of mine was in Riyadh years ago on business and accidentally wandered into a park or a football pitch area where a guy was being beheaded, Tony. And he witnessed it. And he was in therapy for years. And he never got over it. And this is years ago. And you're absolutely right to say that. And it is being said in the pubs.
Is what Oliver Cromwell did to King Charles I, didn't he, in London in the 1600s, at the culmination of the English Civil War. You know, this is barbaric behaviour.
And it should have no place in any civilised society. Justine Hughes on Twitter, to move along, just to get through a few points from our listeners. Justine, lovely to hear from you. Listen to Tony with great interest. Sweden has suggested, tell Tony Ritchie, he probably knows, Sweden has suggested they enrol the new influx of refugees into national service. Is this the eventual plan for the proposed EU army to consist of the refugees? Now, just before you answer that, Tony, the future Mrs. Allen is French, and every morning I'm awakened to the sound of French breakfast radio. I don't understand it because my French is non-existent. But Caroline tells me that on this morning's breakfast news programme she was listening to, national service for French men and women aged 17 is back on the menu again in France, but for French citizens. Problem, reaction, solution right there. What about Sweden saying that let's put some of the refugees into national service? What do you reckon?
Well, why not? But I mean, there's no reason why not. Of course, you know, most countries have had their foreign legions. Many football teams, for goodness sake, have foreign players. Look, we're being set up here for a race war. That's what's happening. I mean, it's quite clear. I mean, they were trying to do this with the Charles Manson murders in the 1960s in the US. And they've been trying to do it again and again and again. I mean, quite in Bristol, we're very, very, very smart, I think, reasonably on the case with all this. There is no truck with the English Defence League, for example, because what they're trying to do is just to set one race against another, to set black against white. And this is, of course, exactly what the elite want. You know, the elite want two things, don't they? They want all the poor people fighting each other and they want cheap labour. So this, for them, is a perfect little recipe. But what they fear most, I think, is that we more indigenous types in Europe will actually sit down in the pub, maybe not in the pub if they're a Muslim, in a coffee shop or something, and have a chat with these people and share some of our concerns about the criminal elite that are running the Western world. I mean, I think it's not just the Western world. Obviously, there's a lot of the mafia, for example, in Russia. The Chinese, I think, even more gangsterish than the Russians, they seem to be, and they're quite a fragile regime, China. But, you know, we've got to get our house in order, and the only way to do that is to be really self-critical about our... And most of the people who are running this, of course, are white people. So we should not be blaming any of these refugees. And also, they are being... I mean, if a bomb goes off, this is one of the things that, I mean, every time I hear the word suicide bombing, I'm immediately suspicious. I don't know about you, Richie. It seems that, you know, if a bomb goes off next to somebody, it might look like a suicide bombing. How can you tell, like, literally within hours or minutes, that it's a suicide bomb?
Minutes, yeah.
It might even be a bomb that's been planted in somebody's backpack, in somebody's pocket. You've no idea.
No.
And yet, you know, without, it would take at least 3 or 4 days, I would imagine, of forensic and evidence presented to the public and everybody, to journalists, to show them it's a suicide bombing before anyone should say it is a suicide bombing. So whenever I hear that, I think right now someone has just been blown up, probably completely innocent, and it's all being blamed on them. And the other thing is they very, very rarely show you any of the kind of CCTV or anything. And this has been proved again and again. I mean, particularly in Iraq, where a lot of this idea of blowing people up and then having a news story that goes 10 times around the world before anyone really investigates it, is where people were being blown up in Iraq. It was being called a suicide bombing. And in the local Iraqi newspaper that would be published in their local language, it would say, oh, well, the world thinks this, but we know this. We've spoken to this eyewitness, photographs of people, names of people who were there, and they said it was a helicopter firing a missile into a bus queue. It was no suicide bomber at all. And they witnessed it, but the world thinks it's that, you know. So what they're doing is they're completely distorting history as it's written by the press. I mean, we had another thing, didn't we? Just literally, I think this is yesterday this came out, Finian Cunningham wrote, I think it's in Sputnik, which is the Russian radio station, explained that the BBC had been circulating a picture from 2 years ago from Lebanon saying it was a starving child in Syria. Again, I mean, this is a photograph circulated by Reuters.
From Madaya, yeah, they're saying it's from the village of Madaya.
And the BBC.
Yeah, it's mental, Tony. Tony, I'll tell you what we're going to do, because I'll get into trouble. I'm going to take a quick break, 60 seconds, 90 seconds even. Give you a chance to grab a glass of water if you want. Then we'll come back. We'll have 20 minutes then when we come back to tackle a few more questions. Great to have Tony Gosling back on the programme. It's been too long. It's been nearly a year since you were on, Tone. Couldn't believe it when I looked at that. Yeah, I really couldn't. We've been speaking, you and I, since 2008. And
quite a lot of water under the bridge since then.
There's been a lot happened since then, my friend, hasn't there? Well, look, stay where you are. Grab yourself a glass of water if you want. We've got a 90-second break to take. We'll come back then with more of your questions, and we'll hear more from Tony Gosling on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Back in 90 seconds.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
NeonNettle.com, a new voice in alternative media. For unfiltered news at your fingertips, visit NeonNettle.com, the UK's number one alternative news site. In association with The Richie Allen Show, NeonNettle.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And Tony Gosling is my guest for the next 18 or so minutes before we have to wrap it up. Bilderberg.org is Tony's website, and he will have a couple of things to say about Bilderberg. There is news. We'll get to that now in a couple of minutes' time. Thanks for staying with us, Tony. A great friend of ours of this programme is Laura LaRue, terrific supporter of the programme. Terrific pop singer based in California. Laura's listening. Richie asked Tony to elaborate on his comment about the Manson family slayings. What was Tony saying that crime was framed to incite?
That's right. I mean, yeah, it was. I mean, I think probably one of the best books on this has been put together by Peter Lavender quite recently. I can't remember the title of it, but he's a very interesting writer. He wrote, I think, probably one of the best investigative books on the origins of the Nazis, which was called Unholy Alliance. I'd recommend everyone to read. It's very readable. You know, he was pointing out very interesting stuff about the attempt to leave evidence in the Manson or Sharon Tate house where the murder took place of Sharon Tate, that that it had been a racially motivated killing. And it was, I think it was something was written on the walls in the murder house in blood on the wall to try to make it look as if this was a racially motivated killing. I mean, this is what they were experimenting with, these ideas, which you know, we've seen a similar kind of thing between divide and rule between Sunni and Shia, haven't we? We've seen a similar thing between Protestant and Catholic over the years, where the idea is to just to get people fighting each other, to get them to hate. And I think the powerful thing that I get anyway, as I said before in Bristol, is that the people are wise to this, that they know that there's an attempt to incite people of different types of poor people of various sorts.
Yeah, of course.
To attack others and blame other poor people for their fate. They started to realise, I think, pretty clearly that this is a bit of a ruse and they're not going to fall for it. I think part of the reason is because you know, the city where I've spent the last 20 years or so is a very multicultural city. I was chatting to a fellow presenter at our community radio station the other day. Turned out the MI5 had tried to recruit him through bullying and blackmail. And there's a lot of attempts, I think, to try and steer. But he's an Islamic guy, and of course, you know, he's involved with several Islamic groups around the city, and they were trying to use him as a kind of lever to start to manipulate these groups rather than just to, you know, feed them information when he felt it was necessary or when he thought there was something to be worried about, which his advice, and I would give this to everybody, is do not talk to any of these special security service type people. Go and talk to your local, if you've got suspicion about something and a worry, go and talk to your local bobby and make a record of exactly what's said and maybe talk to your local police inspector, but just leave these counterterrorism and security service types, give them a long, put a lot of distance between you and them.
Yeah. Good advice, mate. Good advice. Before we talk about Bilderberg, because of course all of this has been discussed at Bilderberg for years, a couple of listeners have been on to say that the planned centralisation of power agenda, of course, the migrant crisis, of course, helps further that and move that along as well. A lot of people would agree with that. Sean was on to say, Richie, what does Tony think about, this comes up all the time on the programme, Tony, what does Tony think, or does Tony think that the powers behind the evil, that these powers come from the greater Israeli plan to expand the land grab through war created through the Middle East, asks Sean. Do you want to just touch on that and then we'll get into the Bilderberg news?
Well, it's, I mean, I think that's one element. Certainly the Israeli state has got big plans to expand, which is naughty, isn't it? I mean, it's a bit like Nazi Germany, you know, and they had the Hitler's Lebensraum program, which was their excuse for taking over Czechoslovakia, Austria, the Sudetenland, etc. You know, they had this whole idea that, you know, we don't have enough. We need what they call, you know, living room, Lebensraum.
That's right.
And the Israelis have got exactly the same kind of program. But, I mean, I think you can't look at the Israelis alone because, you know, there are two other states which are strongly supporting the Israelis, and the Israelis have got a lot of money from the US, which is then channeled back into conservative friends of Israel, Labour friends of Israel, and AIPAC in the United States, you know, which basically lobbies, very, very strongly lobbies MPs and pays MPs and congressmen and congresswomen and senators, etc. But what you see, what they're doing at the same time is they're also monitoring them all. So they're not just giving them some money and saying, well, we, you know, will you support us, please? What they're doing is they are doing surveillance effectively on everybody that they're in community. So if you say, no, I don't want this money, it's a little bit like you're the Syrian president saying, no, I don't want to allow you to explore for oil in the Golan Heights. You know, if you just don't agree with what the Israeli plan is in the Middle East, you're just going to get the iron fist come down on you. And I was talking to a guy of Jewish extraction in Bristol recently, who's just come back from Palestine on our radio show, which is probably worth mentioning those radio show websites, Richie, if that's okay.
Of course, mate. Yeah, I'll tweet them out as you say them. Go ahead.
Dialectradio.co.uk, and that is where you can find the Ian Paddock interview about his raid by the City of London Police and Kroll Security sound to me more like a gang than a security company. Apparently they're offering advice on counterterrorism to all big city security firms and financial businesses, but they're also perverting the course of justice, raiding people's homes, this kind of thing. But that's also where there's a lot of these other interviews that I've been talking about are on there. So that's dialectradio.co.uk, and also my regular show on a Friday, which is the politics program, where we really try and do national and international stories in the second hour and go do investigative journalism, proper investigative journalism, straight talking stuff like you do on here. That's on thisweek.org.uk.
Brilliant, so, mate. Yeah, I'll tweet those out now.
Still trying to do some investigative journalism. And of course, it's a very low budget, but what we're trying to do is keep... I mean, one angle, I'm not sure if you picked this up, which we were looking at last week, was where did the North Koreans get their nuclear weapons from?
I know. I mean, following that, it's fantastic.
Black market nuclear weapons.
Of course.
There is a black market. Hey, folks, I'd just like to tell you, there is a black market in nuclear weapons. And of course, this also plays into the hands of those who would disrupt our world, and official people. I mean, for example, people like Blackwater on their website originally, they advertised as we will fight nuclear war for you. Privatizing nuclear war. We are going to hell in a handbasket if we allow this sort of thing.
Tony, this was on their website, was it? They basically claimed this on their website, yeah?
Because there was a lot of criticism, and there was some. If you go online, you'll probably find some old news stories about it.
Yeah.
But they were being criticized, saying, we are the guys. If you want to fight a nuclear war, we're your go-to people. I don't know if they do a no-win, no-fee. I have no idea. I hope God not.
Well, we've spoken so many times on this program about Blackwater, and you have on your programs as well, and what they are, and they're a heinous group of mercenaries, hired killers.
Where is Blackwater? It's supposed to be an American firm, isn't it? Eric Prinz and everything.
Spot on.
But Blackwater is just around the corner from Sandhurst, from Camberley. It's in Aldershot. It's in the home of the British Army. In the town of Blackwater is just a few miles northeast of London, southwest of London. Nearly got it right. Southwest of London, you'll find a little town called Blackwater. Now, I would suggest is maybe the Brits are a bit more involved in Blackwater than they would like to admit.
You're absolutely spot on. It's 15 minutes to the top of the hour. Yeah, I've covered Blackwater at length on this program before, and I'm sure we will again in the future. We've probably got about 7 or 8 minutes before we got to wind it up. Now, Tony's been writing and reporting on the activities of the Bilderberg Group for many, many years. And he's one of my go-to people to talk to about Bilderberg when they're convening, when they're meeting, as they do every year at a location that, if it wasn't for people like Tony Cotting and others.
Hang on. Let me stop you there. Stop you right there, because they meet at least twice a year. The steering group has a winter meeting, and because they have their sort of spring summer meeting in May, June, which is more public than it used to be, thank God. But then they also have a meeting at the end of the year of the steering group. Now, these are the key people who are basically Kissinger's little steering committee. And Kissinger, I would argue, is your main man as a sort of operational planner. He's the kind of general in charge of it. But at the winter meeting, there was some, and the only way you can tell that there's been a meeting is because you can see, and sometimes it gets leaked. I know a few years ago, some people in Italy discovered, good God, it's Bilderbergers in this hotel. And they made the Italians are really on the case for a lot of this stuff. And they identified the place where the Bilderberg steering committee had been meeting in November, December, about 3 or 4 years ago. But the only way you can tell is because names suddenly change on the Bilderberg website as to who's on the steering committee. Yeah, so there'll be a subtle change. Well, this December, the change was pretty interesting. And you've got onto the steering committee coming one of the West's greatest oligarchs. Who would you like to guess who it might be, Richie?
One of the world's greatest oligarchs.
The West.
The West.
I mean, the word oligarch is always talked about, isn't it, as a Russian oligarch?
It is.
We have our own oligarch.
We have our own here, and one of them is the current owner of Chelsea, but it can't be him.
I tell you who it is. It's Eric Schmidt. I mean, I would.
Eric Schmidt. Yeah.
The boss of Google. He's now on the steering committee of the Bilderbergs. The other guy who's joined with him is the former head of MI6, John Saws. who was booted out. I mean, I think he was booted out anyway, after this whole Mohammed Emwazi business where MI6 tried to recruit this guy who was a, you know, actually a very, very anti-jihad character, and they turned him into a lunatic, a nutcase, and he's been over apparently in Syria beheading people. So everyone was asking the question, John, what did you do to this guy? How did you turn him from a perfectly reasonable, nice chap into a lunatic? But anyway, he is now on the, I mean, I guess for Bilderberg, that's a pat on the back, you know, from Bilderberg, because he's now on the steering committee of that. So we can see they're moving much, much closer to military intelligence, and they're moving much, much closer to high-tech internet technology, which, by the way, Google effectively is a front door for the National Security Agency. Twitter is becoming more
They all
so.
Are. Facebook is as well, yeah. Yeah.
Facebook is. And I would argue as well that Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, he's an oligarch. This guy's another oligarch. He's pretty much untouchable, super rich, and he can do what he wants, and he's got an immense amount of power that comes through the information that he gathers through his service and the people that want access to that, you know. So that's one of the, I think, is very significant to see those changes at the top of Bilderberg. Just running back to some of the research I've done historically on what Bilderberg's all about, the key thing to understand about that is that it started in Oosterbeek in Holland. And why did it start in Oosterbeek in Holland in 1954, the Bilderberg Hotel? Well, how did it get its name? Why was it there? That was a question that dogged me for years until I hooked up with this guy called Dave Barmby, and we did some joint research over the space of several months a couple of years ago. And it's absolutely clear now that both Prince Bernhard, who was chairing Bilderberg, and Lord Carrington, who chaired Bilderberg after him, were both involved in this important battle, Operation Market Garden, towards the end of the Second World War. And that the Bilderberg Hotel was chosen to start it all because that was where the British were massacred, in that exact same spot. Not nearby, in the same spot, during the Second World War as part of the liberation of Holland. And a deal was done of some sort with Bernhard Knowing, who was a former SS officer himself, and he was actually involved with the British Army as a Dutch liaison officer, and Lord Carrington, to throw the battle at Arnhem and let thousands of British paratroopers at Arnhem die in order to prolong the war, so that Hitler and Bormann and the rest of the Nazi hierarchy had an opportunity to squirrel away their wealth so they could recrudesce after the Second World War as a big financial empire. They needed those extra few months between Christmas 1944 and May 1945 in order to get the wealth out of Berlin, out of Germany, and make sure it was available to them as a kind of criminal syndicate after the Second World War. And Bernhard helped out, Carrington helped out, loads of British died at Arnhem, but that battle was thrown. And I think that was just a little in-joke saying the Witch's Cauldron, where so many British were killed in Oosterbeek, where the Bilderberg Hotel is, that was why they chose that spot. So we're dealing with effectively a kind of Nazi continuity network with Kissinger at its head, funded by the Rothschilds and the Rockefeller families. And those are the people, I think, that really call the shots in the West.
No doubt about it, Tone. And we've been talking about this for many years. Before we do, there's just been so many tweets. There's been too many tweets and questions. We've not been able to get to all of them. Before we do call it a day, though, because you've only got about 90 seconds, 2 minutes left, where are they going to be this year?
Looks like the US, and it looks like a guy called Kevin from California has figured out the date and the venue as well. We're not at all sure about this, but what he's done is he's just looked at, well, they've been in Europe several times now. In fact, one more than they would normally. So it's almost certainly going to be in the US in 2016. I'm sorry, I don't have the dates to hand and the time and place. But if you go onto Bilderberg.org, go onto the forum there. That's the guest book and forum. You'll see the dates, which are projected, because he's done checks on the hotel. He reckons it's going to be either this date or that date compared to, because it's always close to either just before or just after the G7 conference. And the hotel they usually use, which is in Chantilly, Virginia, the Marriott Hotel there, just around the corner from the National Security Agency and a lot of the other US intelligence, top intelligence services. So no surprises there. They want the protection of these people, their fellow criminals. That it looks like that's where it's going to be this year. Well,
right.
We'll see.
We've got 30 seconds only, so I'm going to ask you to be very quick with this one. Speaking to Mike Rivero in hour one, we were talking about Mike's belief, and Mike is not the only one who believes that another massive financial crash is in the very, very near future. We're talking about the collapse of the US dollar. Is that something that might be on the agenda at Bilderberg this year?
I don't know about that. I would imagine what's happened now is we're in a situation where these people can let the economy fall to pieces anytime they want. It's sitting on a knife edge. We've got a bubble. All it takes is a tiny prick to pop that bubble. The real economy is not picking up at all. Anyone that living in the real world knows that. If they watch TV, they might think things are going okay, or if they're retired. But the real world, the economy is tanking. The only place where the figures are looking good is in the stock markets and also in property markets. That is all being done through quantitative easing. This money's coming, being dreamt up out of nowhere, and it needs somewhere to go, so it finds these two places. Now, look, it could happen at any time, but you can be absolutely sure that when it does go, and it could go any time, I think it's fair to say, any time they want, they are going to make an absolute killing, not only through whatever events precipitate a crash, but through financially, through futures bets and all that sort of stuff. So, yes, any time. I think we just need to be psychologically prepared for it to happen. And when they say, oh, nobody predicted this, well, we did.
We did predict it. Listen, mate, great to have you on. We certainly won't be leaving it as long as, again, getting you back on. We'll get you back on in a few weeks' time. Go to bilderberg.org and go to dialectradio.co.uk to find more on Tony Gosling. Pleasure, mate. Thanks for coming on. Loved having you on again.
Okay, and our weekly show, thisweek.org.uk, which we'll be doing tomorrow.
Fantastic, Tony.
We've got an exclusive tomorrow, by the way, I think, on the Daily Telegraph. Some dirt on what they've been up to.
Well, tweet that to us and we'll retweet it and we'll put it across our social media, Facebook as well. We'll get our listeners onto it, Tony. Great to have you on, my friend. Bye for now. As always, a pleasure. Tony Gosling on the line to us there from Gloucestershire. He's not in Bristol. I think he did say that earlier on. He's not in Bristol today. He's in Gloucestershire. That kind of wraps up the programme for this week. For the tweets and the emails I didn't get to, I apologise. There was too many of them coming in there. Big thanks to you for taking part in the programme. Folks, I want to say it again. The programme depends on your financial support. Do go to richieallen.co.uk, make a donation through PayPal or through bank transfer. It's way down on this time last year and it needs support constantly. I am putting that out there tonight. I'm not going to say it again. I'm saying it now. Go to richieallen.co.uk. If you've done it before and you have contributed, I'm not speaking to you. I am speaking to the many, many, many listeners of this programme who never make any sort of contribution to it. And if that the case and you are in a position to do it, well, you might need to examine your conscience, because it isn't free, folks. A lot of time and effort goes into making this program, the four live radio shows and the podcast on Sunday, and it, as I said, it exists because of your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk. That's it for the live program. Starting in 40 minutes time is the Live Leak show on liveleak.com. The absolutely amazing, astonishing, crazy, brilliant, vulgar, hilarious show, Live Leak. The Live Leak show on liveleak.com starts in about 35 minutes time. Get on there and watch that. Go to richieallen.co.uk. Do support the programme. I will not talk to you again until tomorrow. I'm making the TV show tomorrow. It'll be online in the afternoon. The Richie Allen television show returns. And of course, there'll be Sunday View, the Sunday View podcast on Sunday, which will be online around about 10:30 a.m. GMT. Thank you, Mike Rivero. Thank you, Tony Gosling. And thank you for listening.